Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Saturday, September 28th. Let me introduce our guests for today's discussion, Eric and Kate. Today we're discussing a groundbreaking study on brain patterns linked to depression. Let's start with the basics. Eric, what did researchers discover about brain networks and depression risk?
Well, Ted, the researchers stumbled upon something pretty mind-blowing. They found that folks with larger salience networks in their noggins are more likely to get hit with the blues. We're talking about these networks being nearly double the size in people who are prone to depression compared to those who aren't. It's like having a supercharged engine for sadness, if you will.
Hold your horses there, Eric. That's a gross oversimplification of the study.
But Kate, researchers didn't stop there. They actually extended their findings to hundreds of other patients. The data consistently showed
Data? Correlation doesn't imply causation, Eric. There could be a whole bunch of other factors at play.
Interesting points from both of you. Kate, can you explain what exactly the salience network is and why it might be relevant to depression?
Sure, Ted. The salience network is like the brain's spotlight operator. It involves regions in the frontal cortex and striatum, which is fancy talk for the front of your brain and a deeper part that's shaped like a striped fish. This network is thought to be the brain's bouncer, deciding which stimuli get VIP access to our attention and which get left out in the cold. It's also got its fingers in the pie of reward processing.
Spot on, Kate. And that's crucial, because depression often comes with a nasty sidekick called anhedonia. That's the inability to feel pleasure, folks. It's like your brain's joy button is stuck on off. A larger salience network could be throwing a wrench in the works of normal reward processing.
Oh, come on, Eric. You can't just reduce depression to the size of one network. The brain's more complex than a Rubik's Cube on steroids. We're talking about...
I hear you, Kate, but this study isn't your run-of-the-mill brain scan. They use this cool new deep scanning approach, repeatedly peeking into people's brain.
Even so, 18 months is just a drop in the bucket when we're talking about a lifelong condition, like depression. We need studies that span decades.
Let's put this in historical context. Eric, can you think of a similar breakthrough in mental health research from the past?
Absolutely, Ted. This reminds me of when scientists first discovered the role of serotonin in depression back in the swinging 60s. They found that low levels of this brain chemical were linked to feeling down in the dumps. It was like finding the brain's happiness switch was set to low.
That's a flawed comparison, Eric. The serotonin hypothesis has been taking more hits lately than a punching bag. It's been criticized.
Fair point, Kate. But you can't deny it revolutionized depression treatment at the time. It led to the development of SSRIs, which have helped millions. This new discovery about...
Or it could lead us down another wild goose chase. We shouldn't be jumping to conclusions based on a study that's about as...
Kate, do you see any parallels between this salience network discovery and past breakthroughs in neuroscience?
Well, if we're playing the comparison game, it's more like the discovery of brain plasticity in the mid-20th century. That was a real game changer. It showed our brains can change over time, like Play-Doh that never dries out. It totally challenged this idea of being pre-wired for anything. Our brains are more like a work in progress than a finished masterpiece.
I see where you're coming from, Kate, but this study doesn't throw brain plasticity out the window. It's more like suggesting some people start the race of life with different running shoes. They might have a predisposition, sure, but that doesn't mean the race is already won or lost. There's still room for change and growth.
Now you're just speculating, Eric. We don't have a clue if or how these network sizes can be changed.
Actually, the study suggests something pretty exciting. By identifying this pattern early, we might be able to step in and do something before depression.
That's a dangerous assumption, Eric. It could lead to unnecessary treatment or stigmatization of people with larger salience networks who may never develop depression.
Let's look to the future. Eric, how do you think this discovery might change depression treatment in the coming years?
I've got high hopes for this, Ted. I believe we'll see a real shift towards preventive interventions. It's like we're moving from just treating the fire to fireproofing the house. If we can spot the at-risk individuals early, we might be able to use targeted therapies or lifestyle changes to reduce their chances of developing depression. It's like giving them an umbrella before the storm hits.
That's a slippery slope if I've ever seen one, Eric. We could end up pathologizing normal brain variations and overdiagnosing depression. It's like telling someone they're
going
to get.
Kate, think about the potential. Early intervention could potentially save millions from suffering. Isn't that worth the risk? We're talking
about. Not if it means unnecessarily medicating healthy individuals or creating a self-fulfilling prophecy of depression. We could be setting people up for a lifetime.
Interesting perspectives. Kate, how do you envision this research impacting the field of psychiatry?
Well, Ted, if we're not careful, we might end up with more brain scans than a sci-fi movie marathon. But on a serious note, I think it could lead to a more nuanced understanding of depression subtypes. We might find that different network patterns correspond to different depression symptoms or treatment responses. It's like realizing that sad comes in more flavors than Baskin-Robbins ice cream.
That's a good point, Kate. I hadn't thought of it that way. This could really pave the way for more personalized treatment approaches based on individual brain patterns. Imagine tailoring treatments as precisely as a bespoke suit, but for your brain.
But it could also lead to an over-reliance on brain scans at the expense of considering psychological and social factors in depression. We might end up.
Not necessarily, Kate. This research could complement, not replace, our current understanding of depression's multifaceted nature. It's like adding another tool to
our. Or it could divert resources from more promising avenues of research and treatment. We could be putting all our eggs in one very expensive.
Thank you both for this stimulating discussion. It's clear that this new research on the salience network and depression opens up exciting possibilities, but also raises important questions and concerns. As with any scientific breakthrough, it will take time and further study to fully understand its implications. Until next time, this is Ted from Listen2, signing off.